If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcasting family, a growing community of music and culture podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and music. For more, visit osirispod.com. The show starts now.
Slow and easy in the Southland. Nothing to do, nothing to understand. On a sweet tea on a front porch swing. Come a little mockingbird, sing us a song so that we can sing along. When the air lies heavy, that's all you need. Now come a little mockingbird, sing us a song so that we can sing along. Loving ain't a crime. Water holes only sometimes apply. Oh, come on, little mockingbird, sing us a song so that we can sing along.
Listening to Southland, the title track off of Lindsay Lou's latest release by the same name. Lindsay Lou and her band The Flatbellies have been mainstays of the current neo-bluegrass revival. Her recognizable sound is both memorable and refreshing. As a woman on the new grass scene, there are no doubt hurdles she has to overcome to be part of the gang. We recently caught up with Lindsay to talk about her tour, the band's more contemporary sound, and indeed being a woman in a male-dominated environment. Our conversation started when I asked Lindsay how the audience is taking to a more eclectic sound that keeps much to the bluegrass tradition, but adds new flavors and textures to her sonic tapestry.
Yeah, I've had some people tell me they notice a difference, and I think there's been some people have thought that I have a new band, which I don't. They just got haircuts and started playing electric instruments. And we've added a drummer to the live show.
Right.
So there's been a shift, and it seems like, you know, it seems like it's good. It's a time for growth and evolution, and it feels good.
The evolution coincides with you moving to Nashville, obviously. Is that a big part of it? I mean, were you sort of trapped in a bluegrass band and thought that it was time to explore other sounds and other ideas that you just couldn't do without a drummer or other instruments in the band?
Yeah, I just kind of felt ready to explore, like you say. I have acoustic music in my heart, you know, always.
Right. Right.
And I played nothing but acoustic guitar for almost my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
My parents got me an electric guitar when I was in high school, I think. And I didn't play it. You know, I was all about everything was a folk song to me. So it's just fun. It's cool to explore some new palettes, sonic palettes, and it's fun, you know, just feels right.
When you're writing music, though, it still is about you and an acoustic, right? I mean, at the heart of it, it is about writing a song in that sort of way, or are you thinking about the other sounds and other things that are going to be mixed in when you're writing a song?
No, when I write it, it's me and an acoustic guitar, or sometimes me and a piano, or sometimes just voice. And we just, you know, I've been working with this group of musicians now for such a long time. We have, we have a rapport with each other. So when I bring a song, we just listen, and people just decide what they feel like playing, what the song calls for. And that's basically what this is about, is us expanding the horizons of what the song could call for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because these dudes have played electric guitar their whole lives, not like me.
Josh
played electric guitar before he played mandolin.
So right.
It's not like, while it seems like a new thing, it also doesn't seem like a new thing. It seems like a throwback, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of these songs come out of something that you've called the Immersion Composition Society. Is that just you going away for a bit and writing a whole bunch of stuff, or how does that process work for you?
It's a thing that a couple of guys started, and they wrote a book about it. And basically it was the way that they started it was they wanted to write 20 songs in 12 hours. And so they made it like a competition between each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they each went off in their separate quarters, and they wrote, and they were like, you know, taunting each other throughout the day, you know, to see who was getting further and doing better. And then they got together at the end, and they shared the songs with each other. And a friend in Nashville brought this concept to me. And, asked me if I wanted to do a songwriter's lodge, which is what I just described.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, that sounds amazing. So I did a handful of them,
mm-hmm.
working up to the record. And so you do it with somebody else. you know, and the first one I did was with my friend Tom Kruger, and Maya DeVitri was in a band called the Straybirds.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a bunch of songs out of that. I did it again with Maya. I've done it with Maya a handful of times. I've done one with Billy Strings.
Right.
I did one with a guy in Ferndale, California. You know, we had a day off in this beautiful old church. It was right across the street from our lodging where we played the night before, and I was like, this would be a great place to do a lodge, but you don't want to do it by yourself because having that another person sort of gives you an accountability
right.
factor, you know, to kind of, it pushes you to keep writing. And so we did that and got together afterwards, and that was cool to share songs with a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just a cool process of, you know, an exercise of pulling it out of you instead of just waiting for, you know,
inspiration
to strike. You know, because we're constantly on input. I'm constantly collecting. I'm constantly taking lyric notes. And the thing about the exercise is you can use lines and notes that you've written, but you can't use any, like, song that's been started. You know, it's part of it's like a game, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You start everything from scratch. And the most I've ever gotten is 10 songs out of one 12-hour session. But it is like a, you know, it's like a trip. It's like a psychedelic trip.
Right.
That you put yourself through to start the day like that. And you know, you don't talk to anybody. You get, like, you know, have your meals already kind of planned out. You know what you're going to eat. And it's
right.
You just feel haggard by the end of it.
Right, because you're so focused on the task, right?
Yeah, focused and, like, stressed. I think I've only done one of them where I didn't feel stressed. Like, always, the whole time, I'm just feeling like a fucking schmuck, you know? like I have no inspiration and I should do something else. This is too hard. You know, it's, like, amazing how emotionally tense it becomes.
Right, right.
And then you get together with the people at the end and you show them your songs and it's like, oh, okay, this actually isn't all bad. This is, I can work with this. I have 10 songs now. It's amazing, you know?
And so you took these 10 songs and others, I guess, and went in to record Southland. I'm curious, though, about songs like The Voice and even Southland, who are a little more abstract in terms of their ideas and words, and obviously the music is as well. Was that something that you brought to the guys and said, you know, what can we do with this, and how much fun can we have with these songs?
Yeah, I mean, when I make a record, I usually have, you know, half the songs worked up.
Mm-hmm.
This is how Ionia went to. Half the songs I've been writing in, like, the interim, and I bring the new song to the band so that we have some new material to play, you know, so that the show is still feels inspired and exciting.
Right.
And so then by the time we get to the record, well, we've already been playing these songs, and, you know, sometimes we'll have retreats.
Mm-hmm.
We all get together and close ourselves off, sort of like the immersion concept, you know, like
right.
shut ourselves off in a cabin in the woods for a few days, and,
mm-hmm.
and I'll show them what I've got, and we play them together and decide what instruments everybody wants to play, and usually it's just whoever feels like playing what instrument at the time, you know. That's how Southland was, and I there's a certain element of fun for that, where it just kind of stays feeling fresh and exciting.
But you're a bit of a hog on Southland, right? I mean, you played electric bass and guitar, both guitars, electric and acoustic. That's fun for you to play all those parts and understand how they all work together?
Totally. Totally. Get inside of music and feel how all the parts are working together to create something, you know?
I'm curious about given the climate in the United States, and we're up in Canada, so it's a little bit different here, but given the climate in the United States and how you're a woman in a and let's stick with bluegrass for the moment, but you're a woman performing in a male-dominated genre with guys all the time, and I mean there are some women that play this style of music, but you know, usually it's not as a front woman necessarily. And so I'm curious about how that feels and how you've been treated by, you know, your colleagues, not only in your own band, but more generally in the community.
Well, you know, I have a hard time not just taking concepts right back to their most, you know, essential, abstract sense.
Right.
I mean, in practice, we're all stuck in these bodies that have a certain reaction from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of tuned in, you know, and that interacts with this thing that's going in inside of ourselves. We're trying to figure out this I and the me and the relationship between, you know, we're like watching ourselves, you know, and
this.
So, you know, a lot of this journey has been introspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much of how I'm treated is an impact of how I treat myself.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I could say, well, I think I've been treated, you know, all sorts of ways. Is it impacted by the fact that I'm a young woman in this day and age, you know?
Right.
Yes. I'm a woman in a woman's body and absolutely. That tunes the way that people interact with you. And I have struggled to feel respect at times.
Mm-hmm.
And it always sort of is a bit of a riddle to me whether that is a product of the respect that I have for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And how I carry myself and the chances that I give myself to give myself evidence that I deserve respect, you know?
Yeah.
It's a bag. It's a whole bag of things. And, but people want to do right.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I think.
Right.
And when I see somebody that's, you know, you see these, interactions, you know, in like the bluegrass world, there's recently this big my neighbors Billy and Molly, who are both exceptional bluegrass guitar players, got in this, became a part of this thread of bigotry in the bluegrass world, and sort of one of these, you know, you wonder if the people actually would be saying the things that they were saying if it wasn't through the veil, the filter of internet,
right?
Trolling, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, pastors were called, and
wow,
it runs deep. People like leave the bluegrass association. They'll revoke their membership because of, you know, like some attempt to be more inclusive and hold events for Bluegrass Pride. And it is a very interesting time,
mm-hmm.
you know, because these people that are acting in this way, they believe. They believe.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They're believers.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a, it's a funny time. It's like nothing new. I read, you know, if you read the, you know, Dostoevsky and you know, these books in the 1850s, it's like the same shit that is being talked about. It's amazing. It feels new all the time. It feels like, oh, these days things are really changing. And yes, it is. But at the same time, it's like we've been here all along dealing with the same shit. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You wonder if it's changing or not.
The more stuff changes, the more, unfortunately, it stays the same, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder. There's this, I think it's at the beginning of Sirens of Titan, that Vonnegut book where he's sort of like casually mentions part of the setting of the book is that, you know, there was a time that humans like didn't have it all figured out. Like they didn't know who they were and people struggled with identity and, you know, like treating the earth right. And, you know, we were like babies and now the setting of the book is like they're past that.
Right.
It's just an interesting concept to think about. Ever being past this.
You could easily write the book now and it would have a similar beginning probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder, I think a lot about this going back to the Garden of Eden, you know?
Right, right.
Like a return to the dream of the future that's the past, you know, whatever, if it exists.
Very deep. Let's get back so we don't get too deep and into the weeds, but let's talk a bit about the music and in particular your voice, because it is an essential element to obviously the music that your band makes, but also to Lindsay Lou. And in terms of you sitting in with people, like so many people want you to sing with them, whether it's the Milk Carton Kids or Billy Strings or Green Sky Bluegrass, everybody wants Lindsay Lou to sing with them on stage or otherwise. How much time and how much care do you take for your voice? Because you're out on the road and you're not necessarily able to sleep well and drink well and all of that. I mean, is it a problem for you to maintain yourself and such an important part of your music?
It can be. But it's changed. You know, it's been a bit of a journey. When I first started touring, I was always losing my voice. And I realized how psychological it is.
Right.
You know, the stress of, if I would think that I was losing my voice and get stressed about it and let it wreck me, it just snowballs, you know? So then I kind of just relaxed a bit and realized that, you know, I had a couple of experiences like, well, I guess one is I've had this mushroom trip where I thought that I had lost, I thought that I had like led the band basically to their doom and to like their, you know, their death. And, and I was screaming, trying to get them to come out of the woods. And I was screaming so loud and hard because I was like, I don't care if I lose my voice. My voice means nothing to me if I don't have these people who I love.
Right.
You know? And that's something that I've been chewing on for ever since, this concept of losing my voice in order to keep the people that I love. Oh, that is tragic. Concept to reckon with.
Yeah.
But I digress already if you haven't noticed.
No.
Quickly. but, you know, this, anyway, to bring it back to caring for my voice.
Yeah.
It's so intertwined with, you know, what's important to me when I sing. You know, I realized, well, if I didn't sleep as much last night and it's a little bit haggard or whatever, I'm still me. I'm still going to work with what I have. And I can feel, you know, it kind of comes and goes. If I was partying and hanging out with my friends, and you know, I can feel like maybe a little bit of, it feels different, but it'll, you know, I did a music video yesterday. Was that yesterday? No, the day before. And it's, I had to sing at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh boy.
And we did like six takes, and from the first take to the last take, my voice was completely different, you know, and I like ate an apple in the middle, and and it softened it. And so, you know, I'm just, I have a relationship with my voice, and I try to pay attention to it and respect it and also not let it rule me, you know, to the point where I'm losing my mind because I'm, you know, don't want to hang out with people, don't want to talk to people.
Right.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
It's a fine balance between just kind of keeping a balance, I guess. I don't have to say anything further than that.
Yeah, and I guess you're more in tune now. You understand what the rigors of being on the road are more now than you did then, and you understand when you might need to go to sleep or stop.
I think it was really like a switch, you know.
Yeah.
It was like a switch that happened where I realized that it's okay, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm always like, I'm just constantly aware. Like talking to you right now, I'm hyper aware of the condition of my voice right now. And if I were to play a gig, I have warm ups that I would do to loosen it up and smooth over some breaks and yeah, certain things coming. Just kind of, I take days of silence sometimes just to let it heal and rest. Yeah.
We mentioned all the people that you've shared a stage with, and there will continue to be lots of people, but who would you like to see sit in with you and play with you? Are there specific singers or players that you think about wanting to share a stage with and invite them? Because eventually, Lindsay, you will be in a position where people will want to play with you as you continue through your career and with your talent. So who are those people? Who do you dream of joining you on stage?
Oh, man. You know, I came from a really big family, and that's where my musical, that's where the band started with me, is singing with my, you know, my brother and my cousins and my aunts and uncles and my mom.
Right.
And I meet these people. This is basically how it goes for me. I meet people like Billy Strings and, you know, Rachel Davis, and Kenneth Pattingale, and May, and I hear them and I see them and they become a part of my life, and that's who I want with me. You know, when Billy sits in with us, or when I can get the Sweetwater Warblers to sing with us, it's like pinnacle. You know, for me, these are the people that I feel so lucky to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's kind of like sex, like people, it's like sex for a woman, you know, it's like so wrapped up, and I'm sure for men too, but maybe more so for women. It's like intertwined with, you know, it's like you can't be, I was just talking with my girlfriend yesterday, and it's like, I think I have an intellectual crush on him.
Uh-huh.
She's like, well, if you can't have, like, I realize for myself, if I have an intellectual crush, it's probably more than that. You know, it's like, it's like, I know them, I love them, I'm close to them, and I.
Right.
And I, it's so meaningful for me in such a big way to create music with somebody who I love so much.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, I think about like, oh, well, Robert Plant, he's a legend. I would love to, collaborate with Robert Plant or Alison Krauss or these people who, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, I think about like people who have had such a big impact on me, to who are still alive, like Linda Ronstadt and Joni Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I don't know if their health is
yeah.
at a point where they even could, you know? But there are you know, people like Paul Simon still rocking, Paul McCartney, you know, the people I see that are making music. Oh, I just saw David Byrne. That was amazing. You know, I would love to collaborate with any of these people. But if I met them and it seemed cool, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't really know them. For now, it's like just kind of stepping one web link at a time out into people who are impacting me from further away. You know, right now, Brandi Carlile is having such a huge impact on the world, I think. And boy, I would love to sing with her. I think that maybe the time will come.
Right.
I get to do that. We could sing some Indigo Girls songs, I bet. Oh, the Indigo Girls? Maybe I could. I had a chance almost to play a show with the Indigo Girls. Speaking of people who impacted me big time, Indigo Girls, Lauryn Hill.
Wow, there's lots. There's lots of, and it's a very diverse group, and then it's no wonder that your music is sort of spreading its wings, so to speak, and that you, as an artist, don't want to be pigeonholed in a bluegrass sort of way, but you are now playing electric music, and there's some soul to what you're doing, but you know, it's still at its core very, very rootsy, and I guess at the end of the day, based on, you know, how you grew up and the people that you were surrounded with, it makes a lot of sense that at the heart of what you're doing, it's still about the song and playing those songs, and then whatever you add to it makes it that much better. But the influence is so diverse that it's no wonder that you're starting to take that turn, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. I love bluegrass.
You love bluegrass,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
You do love bluegrass, but it's time, you know, everybody. I was just talking to Kellen from Fruition, and it's, you know, his what he listened to growing up versus what he listens to now is so diverse, and with so much music available to us, you have to kind of expand the doorway a little bit. Otherwise, you're kind of stuck in a rut doing the same thing, right?
Yeah, it's expanded. It's just, you know, do you want to participate? Some people feel more comfortable, I guess, kind of sitting back and you know, comfy cozy in the world that feels familiar and like home. And that's beautiful. And I like living in that world, too. But to have a little walkabout and find out what it's all about, nothing wrong with that either.
You are back on the road. It seems like you... Probably seems like for you that you're always on the road, but most of October is filled and November's filled. And then the good news is you're going to Mexico to play at Strings and Soul. So that'll be a nice break, sort of, even though you're there. But you'll be in Mexico in the sunshine and doing whatever.
We're going from Mexico straight to Vermont this December.
Yeah,
Mexico,
that's right.
To Vermont. To Australia. That's going to be the
seasons
of, you can really, seasons have stopped losing their, you know, like element of keeping track of time, and they've become sporadic and random.
Yeah. I think you'll know what season you're in when you leave Mexico and go to Vermont in December. I think no matter what's going on with global warming and everything else, I think you'll have a pretty good idea that you're in Vermont in December.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But growing up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, seasons were a timekeeper.
You know,
like, this is the next thing that's coming, and this is like the turnover, and this is where, you know, like, oh, yeah, spring, we were out of winter. Everybody's in the streets in their t-shirts, and it's 35 degrees, but the sun is shining, you know?
No more.
Like, that feeling, that sort of consistency has left the building of my existence for the time being. And as you drew the connection to, is happening on a greater level. Yeah.
Well, you'll have to figure out how to pack, I guess. Hopefully you'll come home for a bit in between Mexico and Vermont, but you'll probably need a warm jacket. No, you won't be home.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I have to figure out how to pack. You're right.
Sorry.
I haven't thought about that yet.
Yeah. Well, that's terrible. And then are you headed right to Australia, right after Vermont?
No, after Vermont, I think we go home for at least a couple of days. I don't know. Something like that.
Shed some
clothes. Sure. I'd have to look at my calendar.
Shed your layers. Yeah, shed the winter jacket and winter boots and stuff. Thanks so much for taking the time. Really amazing. And the record is so beautiful. And we really appreciate everything that you do,
Lindsay. Thank you.
All right. Be well, okay? Have fun.
Thanks. Bye.
An insightful conversation with a very bright and extremely talented woman. We love Lindsay and all that she offers the bluegrass genre and the music community more generally. For tour dates and more, visit lindsaylumusic.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to another track off of Southland. Here is the very soulful Roll With Me.
Were you looking for someone to warm your bed? A pretty mama to cut the crust off your bread? Were you tired of spending your nights alone? Looking for someone to make a happy home? I'm not drawn to the quiet days. Spend my life learning how to get away. You can roll with me, baby, but don't slow me down. I'm not holding on, not following the crowd. You can roll with me, baby, but don't slow me down. No one got anywhere by waiting around. In your world, everything adds up. Drink your coffee from your favorite cup. Who drew the lines you're filling in? I'm gonna erase them and begin again. I see you looking around and I understand, but I dare you take me as I am. And roll with me, baby, but don't slow me down. I'm not holding on, not following the crowd. You can roll with me, baby, don't slow me down. No one got anywhere by waiting around. If you're looking for more, open the door. What are you waiting for? Ooh, ooh, not following the crowd. You can roll with me, baby, don't slow me down. No one got anywhere but waiting around. You can roll with me, baby, don't slow me down. I'm not holding on, I'm not following the crowd. You can roll with me, baby, but don't slow me down.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.